The Guardian.
The eyes to the right, 323. The nose to the left, 302.
Tuition fees are set to treble, but what will it cost the Liberal Democrats? Hello, this is Politics Weekly, and I'm Allegra Stratton.
And I'm Jeremy Hunt. Sorry, slight slip of the tongue. I'm Tom Clark. And this week, it's from I Agree With Nick to burning effigies of him. The Liberal Democrats feel the heat as the coalition government comes through its first major parliamentary wobble.
And also on the podcast, a major shake-up this week for the courts as Ken Clark calls for a reverse in numbers being sent to jail. To navigate through it all, we have The Observer's Nick Cohen and The Guardian's Martin Kettle, and also Emily, who was a student who was on the demo yesterday. Welcome to you all.
So, from 2012 onwards, students are going to face university fees of up to £9,000 per year. And they're looking almost as shocked as Camilla. As MPs traipse through the lobbies in the House of Commons yesterday, outside on the streets, young people in Parliament Square showed their anger.
Afternoon, John.
Shame on you for turning blue!
What the fuck?
That's why it's not over.
What happens?
It's the beginning.
They're fucking freezing us! They're leaving us without toilets! And now they're fucking picking up our fees as well!
I wouldn't say surprised. I mean, it was on the cards, obviously. We were expecting something big for the vote not to get passed, but still.
Nick, it was a godsend for the coalition yesterday. The nature, the extreme nature that the riots turned into.
Oh, just a bit, yes. I mean, I was down there, so was Emily. It got pretty hairy, and people don't like that. Although there is this rather tricky subject in Britain that, you know, you're on very shaky moral ground when you say it, is violence gets you in the papers. If there had been thousands and thousands of students protesting peacefully, you know, been lucky to make a picture caption on page 9. But I think in the long term, you know, the students have a just case. This is an extremist policy. If they just said, if the Liberals had broken their election promise, okay, but said, well, we're going to raise the cap on tuition fees to £4,500, that would be a 50% increase. You could say it's hard times and times are tough and it would be worse than other people having to suffer, but it would still be understandable. But to raise it to £9,000, have an 80% cut in the tuition grant, is just the old passing their burdens onto the young. It is such an extreme policy, it's very hard to see how it can be defended.
Emily, as someone who was on the demo, it must be really irritating the morning after to hear the bulletins leading on discussions of police tactics and the rioting and the black bloc, etc., rather than what you were up to.
Yeah, there seemed to be this direct contrast between the anarchists who are just there to cause trouble and also people that were there with a message. And the people that were there with an actual message seemed to represent the youth of society. There was one woman with her baby holding a sign, and there were other 13, 16-year-old students wearing school uniforms who were saying, I'm here on behalf of my younger brothers and sisters as well. So it was strange having all these different types of people crammed in together and... Yeah, I would have been frightened if I was 13, I think.
Martin, do you think, like, most people look at this, though, and say, well, you know, these are students, they'll be all right in the end. What are they whinging about?
Well, I think certainly some people think that and of course, there's some truth in it, too, depending on where you're looking at that from. I think when people see the trouble in the streets, the protests and so on, and Nick's right that kicking a policeman gets you on the front page, and that happened 30, 40 years ago, too, I think people do recognise at some level that something's up, that this is, you know, that this is something that people wouldn't normally be doing, and there's a reason for it. You know, if it's well organised and doesn't get out of hand, and it's manifestly the case that there are very large numbers of people who are there anyway, peacefully, I think that does cut through. At the same time, though, I mean, history does rather suggest that periods of this kind of protest, violent protest in the streets, you know, do cause a political reaction. I mean, in the 60s, it was Pompidou, it was Nixon, and it was Heath who won the elections, not the left. And, you know, this probably, to go back to your original question, will probably strengthen the government in the long run electorally.
So yesterday, just to be on the specific point, yesterday, do you think it had a cause and effect inside, so outside Parliament and into Parliament? In terms of the scale of the rebellion, We're going to talk about it in more detail
I think on the whole, people know where they stand on this. People know where they know what's at stake for them. They know how strongly they feel about it, whether they're going to sacrifice their career on the put their careers on the line. I think they've all made up their minds long before the protests started.
But in all, you think it's strengthened the coalition, you said it?
Marginally.
Nick, on the class issue, what about educational maintenance allowance? That's being scrapped as part of this, and that's getting a lot less attention, isn't it?
Well, you know, class sort of dominates the media as well. You could see that when the huge reaction to the government's plans to remove child benefit for higher-rate income taxpayers, only 15% of the population, the top 15% of the population, but most broadcasters, most journalists happen to live there. And same with grants. Educational maintenance allowance is something I doubt most people, myself included, even knew existed, or I did very hazily, until these protests. I would like to say, or just sorry, raise a point with Martin, not say take issue with him, when he says quite rightly that the sort of excesses of the late 60s paved the way for Nixon, and in the sense for Thatcher as well. You can see things like Mary Whitehouse in the late 60s and sort of classic Thatcherite attitudes building up. This time around, first of all, you cannot blame what has happened on, I don't know, militant trade unions or lefties gone mad. It's militant bankers who've gone mad, who have brought society low. It is entirely different to the crisis we're in, to the crisis of the 1970s, in the sense of where the blame lies. The other thing is, which is why Ed Miliband, for all his sort of fuzziness about it, is onto something, is what tuition fees are mainly, what this rise tuition is, an attack on the middle class, on the middle class young, because kids from poor backgrounds, if they get to universities, will be paid, rich kids will be okay, or if they get a job in the city, they'll be able to pay off their fees of their first year's bonus. And so I think we're in a different world to the world of the 60s. It's not to say that far-left extremism, violence can't horrify and alienate people. Of course it can, but it just may not play out the way it did 40 years ago.
Well, very quickly, we're going to go into the world of Westminster and the Commons itself. Our very own Michael White was watching closely from the press gallery, and on the way out he managed to catch some members who had all just voted, starting with the Tory MP George Eustace.
Right, we've cornered George Eustace here, MP for Redruth and Camborne, which contains, at long last, a part of the new University for Cornwall. So how does it look from students' point of view and your point of view?
Well, I think there's no doubt that students feel annoyed by this, and I can see that, and we do get emails about it. But I think what we've got to get across here is the fact that they're actually not going to have to repay any of these debts until they're earning more than they are currently. You know, no one will be repaying anything until they're earning at least £21,000 a year. It's a difficult point to make to students, but equally I think it's wrong to expect someone who might, say, leave school at 16 to pay for other people's university education through their taxes, when those who go to university tend to earn much more money.
Chris Leslie, newly re-elected Labour MP. What do you make of it?
Well, it's interesting that obviously most people understand the bare facts of the matter and how the £9,000 annual fee is going to accumulate and possibly put a lot of people off. But interesting,
only for Oxbridge, isn't it?
Well, even in Simon Hugh's own constituency, apparently the university have said there that they're going to go up for that £9,000 level. But interestingly, today I've discovered in the small print on my own brief that the government have said that the banking levy that was possibly going to raise £3.5 billion is only going to raise £2.5 billion. So on the day when there's so much news going on about tuition fees, they've snuck out an announcement that says they don't need to take as much money from the banks. And I just think it's an interesting contrast in the priorities of the government.
Here's Angus Robertson, SNP leader in Westminster.
Some people are under the misapprehension that the tuition fees issue only impacts in England. It does impact on students in Scotland too, and it also impacts on public spending in Scotland. That if there's a reduction on spending in higher and further education in England, because this is something that falls under the Barnett rules, yep. So a decision is made in England, therefore Scotland then gets more or less.
The Barnett this rules is, are the formula which governs the amount of the block grant to Scotland.
Indeed, and if there's a rise or a fall on spending on budget lines in England, it then impacts yep. in a rise or a fall in Scotland. Yep. So a proposal like this that would lead to a cut in spending in Scotland would then lead to a concomitant cut in Scotland, which we're opposed to in this time of economic downturn.
Tim Farron, you've got a very distinctive position on this.
Me personally?
Yes.
Well, I've said I'll vote against. That's perhaps not that distinctive.
Well, no, you've said I've seen you on television, on the radio, the position quite persuasive in terms of what the government's achieved, that Vince has done terribly well. Nonetheless, you made a commitment to your constituents that you'd vote against, and vote against you will.
Difficulty in all this is, without wanting to get all kind of nerdy and esoteric about it, we are representatives and not delegates this place.
Well, I know that.
But
point,
you make yourself a delegate, I think, if you make a specific pledge on a specific issue, and I feel I knew what I was doing when I signed that pledge. I wasn't thinking that it wouldn't come to anything. I believed it and meant it.
So you're in this odd position of overriding your own judgment. Vince and Nick Clegg have done quite well, and you're saying, well, I make myself a delegate on this one, even though I think happily vote for it, and my part-timers probably like it. They benefit.
Well, I think 95% of the package is good, and under normal circumstances that would be enough to vote for anything, wouldn't it? But I think the issue is here, there is a specific point here, which is the rise in the cap, which we pledged not to do, and I meant it then. I didn't just sign it because it was a good election stunt. I mean, I knew it was something that we could have paid for, we could have afforded at the time. It's something we absolutely meant. I believe in it, not just because we could afford it, because I think it's right. But having said all that, I think the position of myself and others have actually perhaps dragged the government in the right direction, and we've got a lot better package than we were going to. Not enough for me to be able to vote for it, though.
That's
sorry.
A cunning piece of argument. Your voting no has made it easier for Vince to get more concessions.
I'm sure that's the case. I'm sure it's the case.
Well, that's politics. Yeah. Thank you.
So some creative logic there from Tim Farron. But Emily, I want to ask you as a student, is he onto something? Is the real problem here, Nick Clegg made this promise, he's broken it. Is anyone of your generation going to believe another word he says again?
I really don't think so. There's a massive sense of anger and disappointment. Much of the protests were obviously directly at Nick Clegg. Shame on you for turning blue and all these chants. And what makes it worse is that he really drove, during his election campaign, he really drove that point home, standing up for the youth and, in this populist way, emphasising that he wouldn't cut tuition fees and that he would think up some new initiative. And I think he's slowly starting to realise the difference between wanting something to happen and actually what's achievable. And he actually said that to us, he was calling us dreamers. I think he was the dreamer in thinking that he could ever stick to any of the promises he originally made.
Martin, is that right?
Well, I think it's going to stick to him. I agree about that. I think Nick Clegg is damaged by all this, and I think his party is damaged by all this. How long that will last, hard to say. A different leader, different times, different priorities in the country, better economic times. It may...
What do you mean, a different leader?
Well, I think that Nick Clegg's now not... certain to lead the Lib Dems into the 2015 election. I wouldn't put it stronger than that, but I think it might be felt by Lib Dem MPs as they begin staring down the barrel of the electoral gun in a few years' time that, Nick Clegg may not be such a great asset as he was to the party in 2010. And I think...
putting it mildly.
This is what everybody is this week could be the week that we all do start to talk about this. We, I think, probably as little as 10 days ago, we're saying, oh, it'll last 5 years. And now people... But Martin, I'm interested in the mechanism. How do you... If he's involved in this coalition, how does he... stop leading the Lib Dems without the coalition falling?
Well, I haven't thought that one through, and I think that is obviously, quite complicated. I mean, he is a member of the government, first of all. So, I mean, I think he would have to resign from the government, first of all. I would imagine at that stage, by resigning as a minister, he could throw the question of the leadership into the fire. I mean, I'm not saying I think this is going to happen, and I'm one of these people who actually still thinks the coalition is basically quite strong, and it's strengthened by the fact that Labour is a crap alternative at the moment and hasn't really got a position on almost anything that I think will really count yet, but it may do, of course, and so I think that the Lib Dems are weakened. Clegg is weakened. It doesn't mean that they're not part of the political furniture for the foreseeable future. I think this idea, which is quite common, if I may say so, in the Guardian, which is that somehow the Lib Dems are going to be now a passing phenomenon, and that we can kind of get back to Tories versus Labour, and that's what it's all about. I don't believe that. I think we are. I think there is a long-term trend going on of division amongst the electorate, which will mean that the Lib Dems. Well, they may take a. I'm fully accept they might take a hit in 2015, but they'll still be around. They'll still be polling between 15-25% of the electorate in most foreseeable circumstances. So, you know, I think they're here to stay, but they're damaged.
Can I just test you on one point, though, which is I think everyone who looks at elections around the world as closely as you do and sees that the big parties are tending to have a smaller and smaller share of the vote, and that's a trend that's not going to turn round. But is it the case that the Liberal Democrats are necessarily going to be the party that mops that up, or could they splinter? Could it be that the Greens will pick up or someone else will pick up?
That's perfectly possible. I mean, I think the Liberal Democrats, you know, are a big party. They're just not as big as Labour and the Tories. But they've got a big tradition. They've got a big organisation. There's a lot of assets there. You know, yes, I think it could split. It's conceivable that could happen. But I think that in some shape or form, they're part of the future as well as part of the past.
Isn't there an argument, Nick, that this vote was extraordinary? Never again in the next 5 years will we have an issue on which so many MPs have promised a certain organisation they'll do something, and that actually this is the kind of high water. I mean, I know that.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a temptation among not just Guardian journalists but Westminster journalists to just say, oh, well, it's just a news cycle, this won't matter, we'll move on. Of course, we will move on. This will be an issue that lasts because graduates, you know, before 2015 are starting to get massive bills landing on their mats saying pay up. Their parents will think, most good parents do not want to see their children go off into life with £60,000 of debt when they were the generation that would buy houses cheaply and have free university education. They don't like it. It's not going to go away. It's not going to go away because how is Nick Clegg going to stand up in elections and make promises without people laughing at him? And an election, you know, I'm not Mystic Meg. I'm a journalist. I'm not a soothsayer. I can't see the future. I'm very wary of the way journalists are going for predicting the future. But, you know, it's not a prediction to say, you know, we may not have to wait to 2015. There's the Oldham by-election coming up, which the Liberals, in normal circumstances, have hoped to won. You know, they got.
This is where the Labour MP Phil Wallace used more or less racist leaflets and
pretty hard stuff, even by the standards of North England politics. And it was overturned, and the Liberal Democrats expect to walk it. What happens if they don't? You've got Scottish, Welsh, local elections all coming next year, and that's all going to put the pressure on the Lib Dems. And to Martin's point, well, which is quite right, across the world, the old blocks of parties are breaking up. That's true. But a party cannot do what Liberal Democrats did and treat its core vote with such nonchalance as the Lib Dems did. First of all, we had Clegg saying, oh, I don't want left-wingers. You know, I don't want all these left-wingers to vote for me. There's no future there. Then he turns on the young people who voted for him. And, you know, I interviewed someone yesterday. I've heard this again and again from 18-year-olds. Four or five times of kids who not only voted Lib Dem, but went out and campaigned for them, and they kept saying, I believed it. I believe they were the party for young people, in a way that Labour and Tories most certainly are not. And, you know, Martin would say there's no God-given right for there to be one big party of the left and one big party of the right in the modern world. That's true. But equally, there's no God-given right for Lib Dems to say we can turn around, break our promises and expect the people who voted for us to vote for us again.
No, well, and that's true. And at no point have I said that I think the Lib Dems will positively benefit from this. I mean, I think it's a question of how bad the damage is. And I just would be a little bit cautionary, not least, and let's face it, because young people don't vote as much as older people. And
that's why they've gone for them.
You know, therefore the fact that the student age electorate may not vote next time round may not be quite as devastating as we would all like to think in a perfect world. You know, the fact is that you know, right through electoral history, young people are less likely to vote than old people. It's a problem, but it will mitigate the damage that the Lib Dems will suffer. Now, it may go on from, you know, it may be that this generation, as it feeds through and gets older, will never again vote Lib Dem under any circumstances. That may well be true, but that's somewhere down the line.
When the tuition fees come in 2012, then 3 years later, so there'll be a third year graduates at the next election. What effect will they have?
Not much, because not many of them will vote, is what Martin's saying, which may be right. I mean, I suppose from Clegg's point of view, the argument you can always make is, yes, coalitions of support, I mean, not the coalition, are going to come under pressure the moment you come into government. And you can point to parties like the German Free Democrats, who seem to have lost most of their voters since the election as well, because it's a pretty tough place to be in government. But the upside, of course, is you can get something done. And Lib Dems might be feeling betrayed on tuition fees, but maybe they can feel a bit more upbeat about the government's crime and punishment policies this week.
Ken Clark put forward proposals to get prisoner numbers down and give more discretion on sentencing to judges.
We must give higher priority to more prisoners to go straight on release. Offenders will face a tough and coordinated response from the police, probation, and other services. It will mean they must either address the problems that fuel their criminal activity or be caught and punished again.
Martin, this is a really big deal, isn't it?
Well, it's a big deal. It's very much brought on by the economic circumstances rather than really through any great revolution in penal thinking in the Tory party. Though it has to be said, Ken Clark has always been on the liberal side of this argument in the Tory party. But you have to remember, he was also a Home Secretary because he's done most jobs at some point in his career. And when he was a Home Secretary, he wasn't a notably progressive penal thinker. So
Nick is waving his hand and saying it's not true.
In terms of the prison population, because I was doing the Home Affairs beat when he was there, it was about 50,000.
Just under, I think.
When Ken Clark was Home Secretary.
Yeah, but it had been brought down under Douglas Hurd.
Yeah, but I mean, Clark carried that on.
I mean, if we're going to get sort of nerdy about it.
We can't get nerdy on the politics podcast, where can we?
Well, I think, I'm going to show some nerdiness now. I think the prison population started going up in about the spring of 1993, around the time of the James Bulger stuff.
When Blair seized on it.
And Blair seized on it.
Michael Howard was Home Secretary. Howard was following.
Well, no, Ken Clark was until. Ken Clark kind of left more or less as the prison population started going up, I think.
Ooh, this is real anorexia.
Well, you ask, Nick, you know. But do you think he could have got this package through? We know it's controversial with the Conservative Home, the website, and many Conservative backbenchers like Phil Davis, who's been speaking up for it. Do you think he could have got this idea of turning the corner on this long ride time without a coalition?
Let's be fair to Nick Clegg for once. No, I don't think he could. But there are a lot of problems with it. We could not all be dancing around the Guardian offices singing rejoice, rejoice at the triumph of liberalism. Labour piled up the prison population without putting the money into the criminal justice system. For the public to accept this, if you're going to treat criminals outside prison, you've got to have properly funded probation. But all Gordon Brown's spending increases, hardly any got through to frontline probation, people who actually supervise criminals. They had one of the many disastrous Whitehall computers, which not only just didn't do its job, it didn't work at all. The head office of organisations like the National Offender Management Scheme expanded hugely. And so on penal reform, you've got to spend money to save money. You've got to invest in probation and looking after criminals in the community if you're going to save money by not putting it in prison. And I'm far from sure that is being done.
I agree with that. I mean, I think the thing going forward is, how will this be seen as the statistics come out over the years, and as if there is another Bulger, another Rachel Nickell or whatever it is that comes along and becomes the kind of symbolic case of our times? And I think it's very clear. We saw that this week in relation to the question of murder sentences. That David Cameron, I think, whilst he is generally rightly described as a liberal conservative, is someone who is extremely clear that politically the Tories cannot afford to sit to be in charge of a system which is perceived by the public as having gone soft, and he is just not going to do that, and I think he crack the whip a little bit this week, and I think he'll go on doing that. And I think if push comes to shove, which, you know, with unemployment going up and disorder and da-da-da-da, I think that you know, Ken Clark is going to have quite a lot of difficulty seeing all this through. And one of these days, you kind of feel that when there's a reshuffle halfway through the parliament, Ken Clark may be one of the people who is sacrificed.
He's also very vulnerable because crime is a class issue in Britain. Crime is overwhelmingly poor men robbing and abusing their poor neighbours.
So for that reason, Nick, is Ed Miliband right to hug him close on this issue?
I don't know. Well, I mean, from cynical political points of view, no, he's absolutely wrong. Mm. But, I mean, crime, Cameron and Osborne, and Clegg, actually, are very vulnerable, saying it's all right for you in your big houses in Notting Hill, or Guardian journalists, their big houses in Hampshire, which I'm sure you all have, to say, oh, let's be nice to prisoners. We are the people who have to live on the estates when all hell is breaking loose. So, as I say, if they're going to make it work, they've got to think very hard about putting money in probation.
So, Martin, let's bring it all back together. Is this enough in a week where he's lost so much trust with, this is Nick Clegg, he's lost so much trust with the electorate and with his own activists? Is this enough to say, hold on a second, I'm giving you stuff too?
Well, I mean, it helps a bit. You know, they can keep on saying that, and they obviously will go on saying that. They will keep pointing to the things that they do. They're also going to be saying to themselves, at any rate, you know, we knew this one was going to happen. We knew this tuition fees row was going to happen. It's implicit, you know, in the politics of the coalition. We've taken the hit. We've taken it early. We hope that as time goes on, the hurt will diminish, and you know that's the strategy clearly. But equally clearly, they've been damaged, and so you know. So Nick Clegg faces a very difficult new year.
And on that note, at the end of Nick's worst week, we're going to bring this to a close, and we're going to say thanks to Nick Cohen and to Martin Kettle and to Emily Dyers for coming along. The producer was Phil Maynard.
I'm Jeremy Hunt.
And I'm Tom Clark. And thanks for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.